From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show, connecting your neighborhood with the world. I'm Michael Schaefer from Washingtonian, sitting in for Kojo. Coming up this hour, the first parking meter went into the ground in Oklahoma City about 80 years ago. And pretty much ever since, cities have been trying to figure out how best to use them. Here's the basic divide. Price them too low and people will just park all day and spaces will never open up. That's bad news for anyone who needs to drive to a quick errand. And it's bad news for any business that relies on these sorts of people. But if you price parking too high, no one will want to drive downtown at all, which is also no good for the economy. Of course, back in the day, the only option was to set one price and leave it at that. Nowadays, cities can vary parking prices based on supply, demand, and location, and powered by big data. Next week, D.C. will launch a pilot program that will change meter prices block by block. The idea is that this is a better way to make it so that would-be shoppers don't have to circle the block for hours in search of space. It sounds great in theory, but this is a city with a highly conflicted relationship with cars. Where some people might see this as a market-based solution to the parking problem, others see it as price gouging. Here to talk about D.C.'s pilot program for performance parking is John Townsend. He's the manager of public and government affairs for AAA Mid-Atlantic. Joining us from studios at the University of California, Los Angeles, Donald Shoup is a distinguished professor in urban planning at the University of California, Los Angeles. And joining us from Redondo Beach, California, Michael Hamilton is a blogger at InMyBackyardDC.com.
Thanks for having me.
John, I'll start with you.
Okay.
So where is this pilot program going to be put into place, and how exactly will it function?
So it's going to be basically around Chinatown, and it's been billed as surge pricing in some newspapers. But a better way to think of it is just variable pricing. So what's going to happen is DOT is going to look at different pricing for different hours of the day, different days of the week, rather than having one price all day and all week, and trying to use new sensors they have that can tell when parking spots are open and when they're occupied to pick better prices to try to make parking more plentiful and try to match that price with the demand that they see. So they're going to do that pretty soon, and every 3 months or so they're going to look back at the data, look at their current prices, and make adjustments from there.
So, Donald, the D.C.'s Department of Transportation has partnered with Xerox to help set price points, and a Xerox official has said this is the most sophisticated smart parking project in the world right now. How so? How will they calculate collect the data you need if you're going to calculate an appropriate price point?
Well, Washington is really a leader in the technology it's using and in the way it's analyzing it. They're going to have sensors in the ground that will measure occupancy of the on-street parking spaces. They're going to use cameras also to measure occupancy rates. And then they'll simply look at the results. They'll look at what's happening on the ground and decide every 3 months whether on a particular block the prices ought to go up or down or stay the same. And we've been doing that in San Francisco and Los Angeles for about 3 years now. And it's certainly not price gouging, because more prices went down than up when they started this policy, because when you have the same price all day long, it's usually way too high in the morning. So prices on average fell both in Los Angeles and in San Francisco because the prices in the morning went down more than the prices in the afternoon went up.
Explain to us, how is, beyond just the prices, how is this supposed to reduce congestion in urban centers, and how has it worked in those places?
Well, it reduces double parking, for one thing, and that certainly reduces congestion. But the main thing is that if there are one or two open spaces on every block, it's really what people call parking karma. It's just what you want to see as a driver, that there's a space waiting for you when you get to your destination. You don't have to drive around. If you do have to drive around, that adds a surprising amount of traffic in any area. And it's driving that people don't want to do. They've already arrived at their destination. So if you eliminate this cruising around hunting for a space about to open, you greatly reduce traffic congestion and air pollution and accidents and a lot of other unpleasant effects.
Has that been measured as data?
Yes, San Francisco has a very elaborate evaluation, and I think the time it took to find a space fell by about half in the pilot area compared to a nearby area that didn't have this Goldilocks pricing, you know, not too low, not too high, but just right. And the Washington program is also a pilot program. I think they're trying it out to see how well it works, and I don't see how anybody could be alarmed at the idea of seeing how something works.
So this is not supposed to be happening all at once. The changes in parking meter rates are supposed to be incremental. What about the changes in behavior that this is supposed to cause? How long will it take for this to actually impact the choices real people are making?
Well, in San Francisco, it took quite a long time. I think it was about 2 years before most of the prices started staying the same. It took about 2 years because the prices only went up by 25 cents an hour at each adjustment. And most people didn't even know what was happening because they don't remember what the price was 3 months ago. And most people don't know how much it is cost of the meter until they go to the meter. So I think one thing that I would advise for Washington is to for the restaurants and coffee shops and even stores to post in their stores a map of the meter prices to show people that they can save a lot of money if they walk, if they park four blocks away and walk to their destination rather than pay a higher price right at the area of peak demand. If more people learn about price differences among blocks pretty quickly, I think they'll respond more quickly than they did in San Francisco.
Donald Shoup is a distinguished research professor in urban planning at UCLA. We are talking about parking and the new DC pilot program that is going to be changing the way you pay for parking. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a ring at 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kojo@wamu.org. You can also get in touch on social media through our Facebook page or by sending a tweet to @KojoShow. Now, John Townsend, your organization, AAA, the American Automobile Association, surveyed DC drivers about what they thought of this plan. Mm-hmm. What did you guys find out?
Well, we found that 60% of motorists in the District of Columbia are opposed to the plan. And what's really striking about what our survey found is that the vast majority of people are opposed to it, and some people, about 45%, are strongly opposed to the plan. And there are people who say, well, parking will never reach the $8 threshold. But I'm looking at the enrolled legislation or the enabling legislation, and it shows that in the Chinatown Penn Quarter area that parking meter fees will increase by a maximum of $1.50 in a three-month period, and that it could reach a maximum of $8 per hour. Now, people look at the plan in San Francisco and they say, well, it could reach as much as $6, and it seldomly did. But the vast difference between San Francisco and L.A. that Dr. Shoup was talking about is the fact that they have parking garages that are municipally owned, and we don't have that in the District of Columbia. So what we're talking about is a universe of 18,000 metered parking spaces. And the parking garages and parking lots in the city are all commercially owned. So the fear is that prices will increase in the District of Columbia. It will be a benefit to the haves and not a benefit to the have-nots, especially people who clean offices and who clean places like the Verizon Center and clean the restaurants and the shops. It will be a tax, a draconian regressive tax on them.
Do you have any stats on how many of those folks, A, drive to work and, B, park on the street when they do?
Yes, the vast majority of them do because they don't have access to Metro because of the shift. If you're working an 8-hour shift and you come to work at 8 o'clock at night to clean an office building, how do you get home? You have to use a private car.
Michael, what do you think of this? There's a big point of contention here about how much the exact dollar amount is going to be. The Washington Post reported that rates could go as high as $8 an hour. But in a post on the blog Greater Greater Washington, David Alpert called that claim misleading. Do you think people will be paying $8 an hour to park on the street anytime soon?
Yeah, I think the focus on $8 an hour is misleading because that's just a cap. That's how high is proposed to never go above. So there's no indication that it will go there. But we don't know, you know, where exactly it will go. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't think it will. But I think the focus on that really misses the point.
It's not missing the point because that's what the legislation says.
It would be much better, especially for someone who's in a tough situation. So if you imagine, say you are a low-income worker and you are going to an interview at the Verizon Center, and under the current system, you go there, and if it's a high-demand time, you won't be able to find a parking spot. You're going to be late. You're going to miss that job interview. You might not get a job. Under the new system, you might find a more expensive parking spot, but it's going to be available, and you're going to have that option to pay for it, and it would be a much better situation. So people are going to be able to decide for themselves whether or not an individual space is worth the money that they're charging under this new system. But the availability of parking, the convenience for people is going to be very good, even for people who aren't millionaires, who have to watch their money, and who do have to care about how much they spend on parking. But it's going to be a really pro-driver, beneficial policy for them.
Well, we have a city that issued last year 1.6 million parking tickets, generated over $82 million in parking ticket revenue. The city also generates about $40 million a year in parking meter fees. And in the last 5 years in this city, the city has issued almost 10 million parking tickets and generated $500 million in revenue. And none of that has gone back into building infrastructure or expanding the infrastructure. You have a finite universe of parking spaces. And what most motorists in the District of Columbia find so disconcerting is how draconian and punitive it is to park in the city.
John Townsend, he's the manager of public and government affairs for AAA Mid-Atlantic. I'm not sure I see the connection between parking tickets and the cost of meters.
Well, the reason you have so many parking tickets is part of the frustration of driving in the District of Columbia. And what has changed the paradigm? So the number of parking tickets in the last 5 years has dropped by 300,000. That's because of technology and not because of the expansion of the parking universe in the city.
But hold on a second. I've gotten more than my share of parking tickets, and I haven't liked them. But I haven't gotten them because I'm thinking, oh, man, I don't want to pay a dollar instead of 25 cents. I've gotten them because I've been too distracted or lazy to go back to the meter after the 2 hours are up. I've tried to get 2.5 hours after only paying for two.
That's a dereliction of your duty, then. That's the reason that most people get. And by the way, when we talk about parking tickets, only a small percentage of these tickets in the city are from expired meters. So let's say you have 1.8 million tickets in a year. You only have about 300,000 that are for expired meters. There are 130 ways to get a parking ticket in the District of Columbia. And that's what we're seeing. That is a horrible experience, which is why I was talking to Council Chair Phil Mendelson last week, because he asked me a question about what we saw in our poll. And the poll also revealed that the vast majority of motorists in the District of Columbia who reside here were also opposed to increasing the parking meter fee by 30 cents an hour from $2 an hour in premium spaces to $2.30. So he asked, why are people so opposed to that? And I said, I really don't think this is 30 cents. I think it is the cumulative experience of people who live in a district and the experience they've had for the last 30 years, including overpriced, not enough parking, and overpriced parking spaces in garages.
Kathleen in Washington has been holding for a second. Kathleen, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to respond to what the gentleman at the AAA representative said about low-income individuals going to an interview and not being able to get a place. Well, people can plan ahead for that. I think this is a universal. It will be much more expensive for them if they are parking every day. I think it's another example of pricing people out of the city, and it's not good. It's there's no way for you to be able to pay that price on a regular basis and not have a reduction in people's income.
Michael Hamilton.
One of the 60% plus of people who is very much opposed to this tax.
Michael Hamilton is a blogger for InMyBackyardDC.com. Is this a tax?
I don't think so. There'll be higher prices sometimes, but the other side of that coin is that there's going to be a lot of lower prices other times. You know, as Dr. Shoup has pointed out in New York, in San Francisco and L.A., what they found is that a lot of the prices were, a lot of the parking spots were priced way too high most of the time, and a lot of them, the right price is zero. So for certain places, you know, if you're right outside the Verizon Center on a Friday night, that's going to be a very expensive parking spot because a lot of people want to use it. But at other times, you're going to see prices come down a lot. You're going to see different blocks go up, different blocks go down. But the important part of this is that these have the right prices so that there are always parking spots available for people who need them and that they're able to find them. And like, and also, too, I don't think this has been mentioned yet, but these programs are usually pretty close to revenue neutral. The difference between prices going up some places and going down to other places usually means the overall effect on the budget is pretty low, almost zero. And so it's not going to be a big source of revenue for D.C. It's mostly just going to make parking spots more available for drivers, reduce traffic, and kind of make things better all around the Verizon Center.
But the San Francisco saw its parking revenue increase between $1.2 million in the pilot years to $12 million, and it already generates $200 million a year in the city. So income did go up. And by the way, when you look at the 145-page report printed by or published by San Francisco, the Parking Authority, there is not a discouraging word in it. It is almost like home on the range, where seldom is heard a discouraging word. And no program is 100% perfect. But yet, if you read the glossy print that you even hyperlinked in your column in the Washington Post, you will notice they say that you have to be very selective about how to interpret this material.
And we will continue our conversation after a short break. Please stay tuned.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/book club.
And welcome back. I'm Michael Schaefer from Washingtonian Magazine, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. We are talking about a new pilot program in D.C. that would apply surge pricing or something close to it to parking meters. And we're talking with John Townsend, who's the manager of public and government affairs for AAA Mid-Atlantic, with Donald Shoup, who's an urban planning professor at UCLA, and Michael Hamilton, who's a blogger at InMyBackyardDC.com. And we would love to hear from you, too. You can join us by calling 1-800-433-8850. You can email us at kojo@wamu.org, or you can get in touch on social media through our Facebook page or by sending a tweet to @KojoShow. And we did get this email from Justin. Justin writes, surge pricing isn't a bad idea after trains and buses run on time and after working-class Washingtonians can live near the neighborhoods they work and obtain care and services. But piling one bad policy on top of others makes the city less livable for everyone. Professor Shoup, tell me about how does something like this, where we're talking about adjusting parking meter prices and hopefully changing people's behavior vis-a-vis driving, how does that fit into these broader urban planning concerns that our listeners are raising?
Well, I think that they're designed to make both the roads work better, both for people driving on the roads and for people parking on the roads. I think that if I were representing the motorists, I would say I like the idea of being able to see an open space on every block wherever I go. So the spaces are well used, most of the spaces are occupied, but one or two is open and available to me. I can't imagine a better way to set prices than to aim for this result, that the only way you can tell whether the price is right is by looking at the results, sort of like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. I know it when I see it. And I've never heard anybody say they know a better way to set the prices than to look at the results. So I guess I would ask Mr. Townsend, do you think the price should be the same all day long? Do you think it should be the same everywhere? How would you set the price of parking? Say that this proposal is very specific and say we want to aim for the right result. And I guess I would get back to the idea of the number of tickets that are issued. And Mr. Townsend was right in saying that most of the tickets are not for overtime at meters. They're for parking in red zones or double parking or things like that. And in San Francisco and in L.A., the number of tickets declined in these pilot programs because there's no need to double park or park at a bus stop or buy a fire hydrant if you can see a meter available where you want to go. And I guess I would correct the numbers that he said about revenue increasing from $1 million to $12 million a year in San Francisco. It didn't increase at all. The average price of parking declined by 4% in the first 3 years. And 17% of all meters went down to 25 cents an hour. So I think it's wrong to call it surge pricing. It's variable pricing. Prices can go down as well as up, and more prices went down than up. So I wouldn't this is what happened, and I don't think we should forget that when we're talking about what might happen in Washington. And Mr. Townsend also said that this would be harmful for cleaners who arrive at 8 p.m. and work all night and can't transit home. Well, if you arrive at 8 p.m., the meters probably stop around then, so it wouldn't affect people who work overnight and on social hours. I think there were some other good things that showed up in San Francisco and L.A. The number of amount of double parking almost declined to zero. That's better for drivers. And I think advocating for drivers, I would say that I like the idea of being able to find parking wherever I go.
John Thompson from AAA, what would you propose instead of variable pricing as a way of fixing the problem of parking in Washington?
I think that Congress forbade the district from investing in municipal parking garages and lots, and that should be an adjunct. Now the money generated from the meter fees goes to support Metro as opposed to being put back into infrastructure for drivers. And so the situation and the program in San Francisco has much to commend it. And one of the things that San Francisco is benefiting from is that it has municipal garages, which they have been able to adjust the rates that they charge in the garages, and people have options now as opposed to on-street parking. You don't have that same option in the District of Columbia unless you go into a private garage.
So what I hear you saying is build more parking lots.
That's not what I'm saying.
Build more municipal parking lots.
I'm saying that the city never did it, which is why we have a deficit. And we're talking about a finite universe of 18,000 meter spaces. So if you can produce one or two vacant parking spaces on a block, that would be done because the price increases. You're not doing anything to add to the revenue to the inventory of parking spaces in the city.
What I've asked is, going forward, what do you suggest we do to fix this? You mentioned Congress having forbade the city from building municipal parking spaces. I took that to mean there should be more municipal parking lots.
No, they can't build any. They're forbidden from doing it because it interferes with the private sector.
But are you suggesting that law be changed?
It should have been changed, yes, years ago. And, you know, it's interesting to me that Marion Barry, when he was mayor, had in his platform at one point where he railed against the charges or how much parking garages in the city were charging people. Justin, who wrote in a moment ago, was talking about poor people or people of limited means moving close to where they work. They can't afford to do that in the district because they're being priced out of the market. There is no resource for them except to drive or to take metro or to take a taxi cab to work. And Dr. Shoup is right in saying that in the hours they work, many of those hours, there are no meter fees, but that doesn't stop until 10 o'clock at night in the district, and a proposal was on the table to increase parking hours until midnight.
So we got an email from Tim, and Tim writes, I wish the city would use the technology that allows it to do surge pricing instead to give city-tagged cars a different parking rate than out-of-state-tagged cars. Give city residents, car owners, some benefit for being city residents. What do you think about that?
I think that's... Well, you know, it's interesting. And in our polling, what we did, we only looked at the attitudes of district residents. And we were astonished by the fact that district residents, in comparison to previous polls we've done, were just as upset about the parking situation in the district as someone who lives outside the district and drives, the 200,000 people who drive into the city each day.
John Townsend is manager of public and government affairs for AAA Mid-Atlantic. Donald Shoup, you're an urban planning professor at UCLA. Are there places where there is a benefit for city residents in parking that is not afforded to people who drive in from out of the city?
Yes, I recommend that too, Miami Beach, for example, has meters that give a discount for cars that are registered in Miami Beach. You can see why they do it, because most of there are so many visitors from outside the city. So the meters that cost $1.75 an hour, that's where it's posted. If you are a resident, you pay $1 an hour at the meter. I think that's a way to show people that the meters are bringing in revenue to the city, paid by outsiders. Monty Python said the ideal tax was a tax on foreigners living abroad, and I think that that's what this policy is. I don't think we should forget in this discussion that 38% of the households in Washington, D.C. don't own a car, so I think that they would be happy to see more municipal revenue paid by other people, and that the money doesn't go to pay for Metro. The meter money doesn't go to pay for Metro. In the past, I think, 6 years, the city has dedicated, I think, 40% of the revenue to pay for added public services on the metered streets. So I think in terms of added street cleaning or better bus stops or historic street furniture and things like that, so that the residents can see that their meters or money is working for them rather than against them. But I think that that if you thought about the fact that, you know, many people are too poor to own a car, and that the money will benefit the area they live in, it's probably either misleading to think that this policy is going to hurt poor people. And in any case, it's only parking meters. It isn't a big part of anybody's budget. It's only for a short time for most people. Getting rid of the traffic congestion, we also have to think of CO2 emissions now, of cars driving around hunting for an empty parking space. I guess I should agree with Mr. Thompson about the finite number of spaces, but the one of the big benefits of this variable pricing is that it increases the occupancy of the blocks during the morning. So if there are time, the prices go down as well as up. They go down because half the spaces are empty, and that means they're wasted. So I think that it does increase the number of cars parked on the street. There will be, by reducing the price at times where it had been too high and the occupancy was too low.
John Townsend, were you saying that there should be less money given to Metro? That sounded to me...
No, that's not what I'm saying. I was stating a reality. I was making a statement of facts.
Sure, but if we're talking about better ways to fix the parking situation, should that reality be changed?
Well, what we have is a situation in this country, increasingly so, that the revenue exacted from motorists are being diverted to other projects, and that is an argument for another day as to whether that is fair and whether that is equitable or whether that is just a reality. But the fact of the matter is that what motorists would want is as Dr. Shoup was saying, that money be invested in infrastructure that benefits motorists and people who drive in the city.
Anne in Washington has been holding. Anne, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I think before D.C. tries anything complicated and new, it ought to get to a point where the information on a parking meter about the hours of parking and the hours of paying matches the information that's on the sign on the street, because so often they don't match and you don't know when you're supposed to pay to park and when not. And on top of that, the information that Parkmobile has, which I use all the time, doesn't match what's on the sign or the meter. You just don't know what you're supposed to be paying for that meter. So with variable pricing, I can't imagine how a driver will know what the story is. And D.C. just can't get the information straight.
And Michael Hamilton, you blog at InMyBackyardDC.com. This sort of frustration, I think, is a thing that a lot of urbanists need to address or want to address, which is to say people don't have a great deal of faith in the city government to do things around parking right now. Is variable pricing asking them to take a great leap of faith beyond that?
Not really. I think it can improve the situation in two ways. The first is that a lot of these programs rely on smart meters, so the meters themselves will have more information about what rates you're paying and what are the restrictions, how many hours, what time you have to pay. And especially if they're running 24 hours a day, you can find your payment information at the meter itself rather than relying on the signs, which can be very confusing and sometimes contradictory. I think that'll be a big improvement. But also, too, I think this is one reason why they should go, instead of using the variable pricing where DOT has to set prices themselves and look at the data and make a decision on their own, and switch to an actual surge pricing way of doing this, because that way the prices set themselves, the meters are doing the work, the meters have all the information for the customer that they need to find out, and all the meters will interact with each other and just keep spots available on every block. So that way, drivers, all they have to do is just drive to a block. On any given block, there'll be two or three available spots. They look at the meter, they see what the price is, and they can decide if that's too high or it's the right price for them. And a lot of time, that information is also paired with official apps, too, so you can know exactly where the spots are open, what the restrictions are, what kind of time limits there are on the parking spots, and what the price is, of course. So I think that moving to a real, actual surge pricing model would be alleviate a lot of these potential problems and just make it work a lot better for drivers.
Again, what I think I heard Anne saying was, look, we can't even trust these guys to get the language on a simple sign right.
That's
Why
true.
Should we trust them with something as complicated as surge pricing and employing data correctly?
And she speaks to a reality in the district, and the fact of the matter is that you have over 100,000 parking signs in the city that are confusing. Look, just 2 weeks ago, or actually a month and a half ago, the district was supposed to implement longer parking enforcement hours to midnight and to increase meter fees. And DDOT couldn't pull it off. It was 2 days before it was scheduled to go into effect, and DDOT wasn't up to snuff or up to par to do it. None of the 100,000 parking signs had been converted. None of the decals on the parking meters had been changed. And it was chaos, absolute chaos, because they were not ready for prime time. And I like DDOT. And now there's a proposal on the table in the District of Columbia to consolidate all of the parking efforts into DDOT under a bill sponsored by Councilmember Shea, the Transportation Reorganization Amendment Act of 2015. And the concern is, if you consolidate all of this into DDOT, can it work? And our answer is, we're fearful that it probably won't.
And Donald Shoup, you have studied parking issues around the country, and you have spoken very knowledgeably about this issue of using technology to price meters appropriately. What are some ways that people who administer this program could let people know the specific rules? Because I think that's a thing there's a lot of confusion about. And when you're talking about a city like Washington, we're talking about people who may be driving in from elsewhere who may not have the official app. What are some ways that have been successful elsewhere?
Well, I think that's a good point, that at least on the West Coast, they have a very elaborate web presence. You can, if you want to, you can look at on the web, and you can see the price on every block at every hour. And there are also heat maps showing the prices that are where parking is expensive or low, or heat maps showing whether there are lots of open spaces or no open spaces. So I think getting that information out is important, and that's why I suggested that the coffee shops and restaurants and stores would post a map inside their shops to showing where that people could get a good deal on parking. I don't think it should be called surge pricing because, as I said, more prices went down than up, unless you think of surging downward as well. So I think surging sounds as though it can only go up, but in practice it also goes down. I think that this is only 1,000 meters out of the 18,000 that Mr. Thompson mentioned, and I think it would be worthwhile to see if they could do this for the 1,000 meters, because if they do that, they really have to get it right. The signs have to be right, and the meters have to function properly. I think they have a very good plan for the technology they're using, and I think it will be inspiring to think that finally Washington is leading the nation in a transportation policy, and cities around the country and around the world will look at these results. That if they don't work out well, it'll be a black eye, but if they do work out well, it'll show that maybe we haven't lost our ability to lead the nation or the world in doing something sensible, which is fairly simple. That I think you asked Mr. Thompson, how would he set prices? You know, I said very specifically, you aim for the Goldilocks price, not too high, not too low, but just right. And I don't know any other way to set the right price for curb parking except to look at the results. So I really would ask anybody who is opposed to this pilot of a relatively small number of spaces in Washington, how would you set the prices? How would you like to see parking, on-street parking, be managed? That I can see you want more off-street parking, but that won't happen anytime soon.
Mr. Thompson, what is the way to set prices? What would you do?
Well, I think going back to what Dr. Shoup is saying, I think that the reason motorists are so concerned about the issue is because we're first talking about Penn Quarter, Chinatown, and 1,300 parking meter spaces or parking spaces. But this is going to be implemented citywide if it's successful in that quarter. Secondly, we talk about technology, and I'm surprised at this, that 47% of people who live in a district and drive in a district have never used the smartphone app to pay for parking. And I would have thought that number would have been reversed. They've never used it. And only 18% of people who live in the city report to using an online or phone app to pay for parking in the district.
And you're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Michael Schaefer from Washingtonian Magazine, sitting in for Kojo. We'll continue our conversation about parking and technology in a moment. Stay with us. And welcome back. I'm Michael Schaefer from Washingtonian, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. We're talking about parking, and I'm talking with John Townsend from AAA Mid-Atlantic, Donald Shoup, he's a urban planning professor at UCLA, and Michael Hamilton, he's the blogger at InMyBackyardDC.com. The District of Columbia is about to roll out a pilot program for variable pricing on meters, which is, according to advocates, going to help free up parking spaces in Washington, and according to critics, is going to be an exercise in price gouging. Michael Hamilton, you are an urbanist blogger, and you have written that parking policy is about much more than just traffic. You contend it can have an impact on development in D.C. What would this policy, if it was implemented more broadly, mean for new housing or office construction in the city?
I think it'd make it a better situation where parking was less of an issue. Mm-hmm. Right now, a lot of times in neighborhoods all over D.C., a lot of people park their cars on public streets, and they think that, you know, right now I spend a lot of time surfing, looking for parking spots. A new house is going to only make it worse. And I think with a smart parking proposal, either with variable parking like we have now or with an actual surge pricing model, people will have a much easier time parking all over in the city. It'll be easier to make decisions about where to move, where to put your car. And then when a new development is proposed, people will have much more faith, and they'll know that it's not going to make things significantly worse because we have these kind of flexible systems in here that can respond to demand, and that it won't result in a bad outcome. And so I think that a better parking system is not only just make it easier for drivers right now, but also it makes the city better able to respond to growing population, different changes in businesses and where they locate, and also just people's reaction to letting new people live in the city. So I think it'd be a big improvement overall for D.C.
Virgil in McLean, Virginia, I think has a different take on that.
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Ann for bringing up the problem of the dissonance between the signs and the meters. And anybody that drives into the city knows that at least 3 meters on each side of the street don't work, so then you have to repark. But my concern is that there was an employee of the district who had a goal of reducing the number of parking spaces in the new buildings. As the buildings are renewed in the district, there was a rule about how many new parking places must be placed in those buildings, and her goal was to reduce that and relieve the property owners from these parking places, so it's exacerbated the parking situation on the streets. And unfortunately, she's now in the Obama administration with this anti-car crusade. I think if the district doesn't want people to come in from the suburbs, they should just state that, and we can take our businesses to the merchants in the suburbs who do want the business. It's really incredible to me that we're doing everything we can to reduce the use of the city by people in the suburbs.
And you're right. They did jettison the parking minimums, which means the developers no longer have to provide adequate parking. And the foolish notion behind this is that it would drive down the cost of housing in a city. I would like to see that. Real estate costs are still going up. But people who are smart growth types and free market types all subscribe to these foolish theories that don't have any empirical evidence backing it up. And by the way, you mentioned one more thing. And one thing we polled for was to see, we know the district is losing $3 billion a year in retail spending annually to nearby cities outside of the district, right outside of the district. And we wanted to see what role parking played in that decision as to whether you wine and dine in Bethesda, where there's parking, or in Northern Virginia, or in Annapolis, as opposed to parking in the district where it's such a headache. And by the way, 65% of respondents said that this would have a negative impact on the businesses and restaurants in downtown Washington. And a goodly number of people say they routinely drive outside the city to avoid the parking headaches. And these are district residents. So there's an economic drain because of the parking situation to the tune of $3 billion a year.
Now, John, we got an email from Peter. He writes, please ask your panel to discuss the effect on the D.C. parking situation of AAA using funds from membership fees to lobby successfully against mass transit and bike lanes and for doubling the income tax subsidy for commuter parking while suppressing the pre-tax allotment for traffic. I have to ask, I'm a AAA member.
All of that's
how much
nonsense.
Of my money is going to lobbying?
That's a nonsensical question, Michael, and you know it is. We are an advocacy group, and we advocate for motorists, okay? We represent. That's why we polled in the district, because we want to know not only what district residents think, but AAA members who live in the district think. And this is not anything but an honest appraisal of what district residents and AAA members in the city think.
Hey, you had mentioned the high costs, which in your telling require that a lot of low-wage workers have to drive into town because they're not near Metro. One fix that I think Michael Hamilton would probably advocate for to high costs is to create more supply. And requiring people to devote a certain amount of square footage or something to parking spaces makes it more expensive to create that supply. How do these two positions of yours jive with each other?
I don't understand your question. I'm sorry.
That is to say, if you are concerned about low-wage workers
mm-hmm.
who need to drive cars,
mm-hmm.
and people are contending that the cost of building parking spaces adds to the cost of building buildings, thereby raising the cost of real estate in Washington and exacerbating this incredible run-up we've had, isn't that creating a problem for these workers?
No, I think that what the district needs to do is to have innovative programs. For example, you have office buildings in town that have parking spaces. At night, those spaces go empty. And almost like the parking app now, which is Zerks that finds parking spaces for people at a reasonable price, that may be one option for workers who work at night in the District of Columbia. You have again, we go back to the premise that you only have a finite number of on-street parking spaces in the District of Columbia. And what we need to be looking at are innovative solutions using technology to solve this problem, not to monetize the problem. We don't mind having a pilot program. We're not opposed to that. Most of our membership is not opposed to that. What they're sick and tired of, though, is always thinking of ways of monetizing a problem instead of solving it. So what do? You stick it to the motorist. You stick it to the motorist. You always charge him or her more.
Someone who takes Metro has to pay more if they go into work at rush hour, if they come mm-hmm. home at rush hour. How is this different?
It's no different. And that's why I think you have this frustration in the District of Columbia. That's why ridership is dropping.
Wait a minute. There has been rush hour pricing since the beginning of Metro.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Ridership is dropping on weekends because there's a lot less service.
No, you go back to the report that Metro itself published 2 months ago, and it said that because of frustration with the level of service and an increased price of using Metro, people are leaving the system. Ridership is down on Metro during the workday.
But going back decades, mm-hmm. people who take Metro have had to pay more at rush hour. Why should drivers be
different? Well, hold on a second. That's not exactly true. Even the amount of the increase is carefully priced so that you don't drive people away from Metro and back into their cars. Metro is a heavily subsidized system, and even the people that use it are being subsidized.
Sure, and the metered parking places we were talking about are on public streets that are owned by the public.
By the public and paid for by taxpayers in the District of Columbia, which is why we only surveyed them to get at their pulse as to what they think, because they live, move, and have their being in this city.
Michael Hamilton, you're a blogger, and you've written about these sorts of issues. AAA says they're not opposed to the pilot program. They are just going to be watching it really closely. If it is a success, where else would you like to see it happen in D.C.?
Pretty much everywhere where parking is unpredictable and it's difficult to find a spot, you would have benefits from introducing some kind of pricing mechanism into people parking in public. So this could be in residential neighborhoods where there's a lot of people who are, say, parking in front of your house because they're going to a nearby restaurant. It could be near schools. It could be near some of our universities. Also near Metro stops for people who are parking to use Metro to ride into downtown. And also, too, I wanted to correct one thing. There was a claim made that there's no empirical evidence about the cost of parking. Our other guest here happens to be the world's leading expert on the issue. If you want to know more about how expensive free parking is and parking minimums and how that affects housing, Donald Shoup's book, The High Cost of Free Parking, is the resource we should be looking into. So I don't want to let that be said without having that corrected here.
I'm a disciple of Donald Shoup. I was in graduate school in urban studies, so I followed him for a long time. He's one of the wise men.
And John Townsend from AAA, Donald Shoup from UCLA, and Michael Hamilton from In My Backyard, D.C., thank you very much for being here. I'm Michael Schaefer, sitting in on the Kojo Namdi Show. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.